And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that time, yours.
Super Bowl 55 week is officially here. Everyone is still in their home bases at the moment. I know, Nate, you will be headed to sunny, lovely Tampa Bay, Florida. Before too terribly long, we're going to bring you not one, not two, but three editions of Time's Ours this week with myself, Josh Briscoe, along with the soon-to-be in Florida, Nate Taylor, and the recently was in Florida, Seth Kaiser. And guys, I feel like this last week has in some ways flown by, in some ways dragged on for months, but I feel like now officially we're locked into Super Bowl mode, and hopefully the game's going to feel like it gets here as quickly as possible.
Let's all act like we've been there before, right? Because they were just here a year ago. But everything's changed. It's going to be a chaotic week. I can't wait for all of the nonsense, all of the real analysis, all of the, like, stories that you're trying to jam-pack. Look, this is a Times Ours record, right? We're gonna really push it this week to get you guys super, you know, geeked up and prepared. And I'm not saying everybody has to run through a wall, but we're gonna run through a wall in terms of, I guess, podcast audio. So look, I'm thrilled. It is Sunday, January 31st, and it's officially game week.
It's because it's been such a weird season. I like the way you said it. Like, it's gone fast, but it's also kind of crept up. I don't know. It was definitely weird for me thinking as they started to demolish the Bills, like, oh, they're going to the Super Bowl. The whole act like we've been there before, it's a weird week emotionally, man. Like, I keep waiting to get, like, super nervous or, like, super hyped. Like, last year, dude, I could not sleep. Like, the amount, I think I even tweeted about the amount of junk food I ate Saturday night trying to fall asleep, and it did not work. And I mean, and then I didn't feel good. It was a wreck. And I am a man who, you guys have seen, I can put away food. For me to eat myself sick requires a disgusting amount of food, like truly horrifying.
And we've eaten with you before, so believe me, we know.
You've seen it.
We know how disgusting gonna say anything. You are.
Look, man, I referenced it for a reason. I make no bones about it. I like food. You guys get to see me on, like, the one occasion a year I get to eat Joe's. You know what I mean? And so I'm going to devour that stuff until I can't move, then pop, like, 10 digestive enzymes and hope they do good work. Like, just hope that's what I do. So, I mean, I was so nervous, like, the whole week. I was like, man, I can't believe this is happening. And I was just trying to enjoy it because that was my advice to everyone. I wasn't following my own advice at all because I was just a wreck. Whereas this week, I'm like, cool. They're going to be in the Super Bowl. And I'm waiting to figure out what I'm going to be like during the game. So it's just a lot of emotions. Like, man, is this already becoming old hat? I'm more afraid of them losing than I'm joyfully looking forward to them winning, because I cannot handle the, oh, Tom Brady proved once and for all he's the GOAT and always will be conversations. I'm not ready for it, guys. And so, yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
I think that's probably at least, I'm sure there are some people, I should say, listening right now. They're going like, yeah, I get it. And there's some people right now screaming at their phones or computers or whatever, asking why you're not more stressed out right now. If not for the negative reason of what the conversation this offseason will be like if they don't win this game. For the excitement of this team potentially winning back to back. Like, we've just all sort of accepted run it back as the reality of the world for the last 11 and a half months, but they might actually complete that, which is incredibly rare and incredibly difficult. And also, I just think this game is going to be fun. Like, this, I have gotten more excited about the specifics of this matchup as things have progressed. And I hope everyone is excited about it as well. So we've got today's show. We'll do another one midweek, another one to wrap up the week and send you into the Super Bowl. But right now, we've got some news, and this might be the most sort of newsy front-loaded segment ever, because we're going to take a whole bunch of questions immediately after this. But there are two really significant injury updates that we've gotten so far. One of them good, one of them not so good. The good news is that L'Jarius Sneed has cleared the concussion protocol and it should be good to go. That's obviously excellent. He was concussed in the AFC Championship game. You felt pretty good, I'm sure, about him having 2 weeks, Nate, to get ready. But it sounds like it's nothing but green lights from here on out for Sneed.
Yeah, and that was a pretty big indicator, I should say, Monday night going into Tuesday. It was something that I really never sort of concerned myself with. The Chiefs have obviously put out pictures of him sort of practicing, even though, like, you know, reporters were not really allowed to watch the bye week practices. Obviously, reporters will be allowed to watch, this upcoming week's practices. Obviously, the team prepares for the Super Bowl before flying to Tampa Bay. But, Andy Reid never had a real issue with it. He obviously said that, hey, L'Jarius is getting better. He's doing fine. Rashad Fenton is another person to just keep an eye on, but it's, you know, in terms of the player and what you expect them to do in the biggest game of their life, it's nice to know that L'Jarius Sneed has a week to really get ready to face the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because he is such a central part of what the secondary has done over the last month and a half or so.
We talked about that a lot last episode, but Seth, if you could give us just sort of like the Cliff's Notes version of that, of exactly how valuable he's been to this defense and why.
Sure. He allows them to play things a little bit differently. He's the best cover corner on the team, at least he has been this year. And he's also incredibly versatile. He can play in the slot, which is something that, you know, Bashaud Breeland has done, like in Green Bay, but that's not what he's best doing. Rashad Fenton can do it. And he's probably about equivalent, but he's not as gifted physically as Sneed is. Charvarius Ward is not a slot corner. And so he's able to do that, which allows them to move Tyrann Mathieu around. And that helps them disguise things more. And kind of like against Buffalo, like I wrote about last week, they were moving guys all over the place. And Josh Allen just had no idea what was going on. He couldn't trust his pre-snap reads. And you could tell he'd start his first couple of reads, it would be guys who were completely blanketed. By having him there, a guy you can really trust in the slot, you can move Mathieu around, or you can move Mathieu to the slot and then have Sneed blitz, right? Mm-hmm. Which he's shown a proclivity for. Finishes really strong, closes fast. One of the advantages with corner blitzes is that quarterbacks can't get away from it, right? And they close quickly. And so it allows them a lot more flexibility and creativity, as well as just having another really talented player in the secondary. And so it's been awesome. And then obviously having Juan Thornhill suddenly play like a Pro Bowler again, that's been nice. Didn't see that coming. So it's been a cool thing to watch.
And then the not so good thing is that Willie Gay Jr., who was on his way back from the injury he suffered against the Chargers right at the beginning of the game in week 17, looked like he was on his way back, Nate. And honestly, there are a few details of this that I'm a little bit fuzzy on. Can you pick it up from wherever you know what happened to Willie Gay up to this point?
Yeah, so I'm going to try to remember everything. With everything going on, there's a lot of planning involved. My head is just all over the place, but
if you can sadly get just loose, like even close to the right day on things, I think people will forgive you at this point. It's been a hell of a month already.
It really has. And so, unfortunately, I'm sorry, guys. There will be no sprinkling of Willie Gay, as I was sort of led to believe on Wednesday. Because I believe that's when we did the podcast. Or was it Thursday? I can't remember. It was after their practice. But, you know, as I'm saying, hey, they're going to sprinkle Willie Gay, unfortunately, they were doing more evaluations of Willie and just basically realized, hey, man, for the longevity of your career, it makes no sense to rush you. Let's have this procedure. I never want to acknowledge that a knee surgery is considered minor, because it's not. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see, later on this year, unfortunately, I don't know what the offseason program is going to look like, whether the guys will be on the field or if it'll be similar to last year in terms of the COVID restrictions and just having guys do everything virtually on, you know, WebEx. So look, we may not get a real understanding of where he is up until about June, July. But it sucks. And now we know for sure, as I wrote the day of the season finale in the regular season, that the game that mattered the most to the two players on the Chiefs roster ended up getting hurt, and neither one of them made an appearance in the postseason. Obviously, that's DeAndre Baker with his injury, and then obviously Willie Gay, who was really starting to show the ability to be a starter. If he didn't know everything, he was just too athletic enough not to put him on the field. Yeah. So this means that a lot of the burden and a lot of the shoulder to carry, you know, sort of the responsibilities and the things that Willie Gay would have done had he been available is now placed on Daniel Sorensen. And it's fascinating to me that you know what you're going to get from Damian Wilson quietly, might be his last game as a Chief on Sunday. You know what you're going to get from Anthony Hitchens. He is really super valuable in case of the whole Leonard Fournette matchup as we move forward. And then for the athleticism, the coverability, the chance to be as multiple as possible, I think a lot of it will now be on Daniel Sorensen. He's already done it in the past. Not a lot changes, especially now with L'Jarius Sneed back into the mix, because that sort of defines both of those guys' roles, Sneed and Sorensen. But yeah, I know it sucks, and guys were really eager to see Willie have a couple, you know, roles, like 10, 15 snaps in the Super Bowl, right? Maybe he's a plus player on special teams, if not on defense more so. Again, it would be great from an experience standpoint to have a rookie see it from the whole beginning to the end. Unfortunately, this is much like the Juan Thornhill situation. He played in the season finale in the regular season, did not make an appearance in the postseason. What you hope is he, as in Willie Gay, will have a year or two the way Juan Thornhill has, where it may take some time, but when you need him at his absolute best, he can show up if the Chiefs are in the playoffs next January. So it sucks. Guys were really eager to see what he would do to just, you know, to obviously win the game for him to be able to play in it. But you're not going to get Willie Gay. You are going to get Sammy Watkins.
Oh, I didn't even thought about bringing Sammy Watkins back. And one thing I want to say with Willie Gay, and then I'll let you hop in if that interests you, Seth, is that I don't know if you ever said the word meniscus, which is what you say knee injury and surgery that's not as major as it could be theoretically.
Not ACL.
Not ACL, not MCL, not PCL. I think those are all real. If no DCL, which I don't think is a real one. But a torn meniscus, and again, the early reports on that is that it'll be about a 4-month recovery, all things going well, and hope to see Willie Gay back for whatever camp looks like at that point. Seth, in terms of the Super Bowl, in terms of what we'd seen from Willie Gay, this might be kind of our best chance to look back at his season as well, which I've got kind of an overarching thing on that I'll hold until after you talk about what the defense is losing by not having the option of going to him in Tampa.
You know, We've talked about him all season, wondering why we're not seeing more of him, right? He brings a lot of sideline-to-sideline speed. He seems to play pretty disciplined with the run defense. Overall, he is somewhat susceptible to fakes. He's got some rookie stuff in him. But he played really well for a rookie in limited snaps. His responsibilities were relatively limited. But you could see the speed and physicality that he brought to the defense, as well as ability and coverage. And that's frustrating that they won't have that out there, because the Buccaneers used their running backs and their tight ends pretty successfully against the Chiefs in the last matchup. And Willie Gay Jr. is a guy who can help negate some of that. Now, to be fair, the Chiefs have been playing running backs and tight ends pretty well. I mean, everyone talked about Cleveland's guys, right? And they controlled them really well. But tight ends have been a bit of an issue. Spags doesn't run a ton of, you know, having your linebackers cover tight ends one-on-one, but they do a lot of like up the seam, that sort of stuff. So they're going to need another really good game out of Hitchens, which quietly he's been good in the playoffs. So good on him, but it's a bummer for them. However, he did flash enough to where I do think next year you should see a much larger role for him in the defense, because the talent and the natural ability and instincts are clearly there.
Here's my big overarching thing that might be We can dig into this more sometime in the off season, but I'm thinking about it now because in part of the Willie Gay news, and also in part because the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl, despite the thing I'm about to say.
Mm.
The Chiefs got incredibly little from their first three draft picks. And that's not an indictment on Brett Veach, nor the picks, nor it's not an indictment on anything. It's not a complaint about anything. They're in the Super Bowl this year, having gotten very, very, very little from their first, second, and third round draft picks. If anything, it's an achievement, and maybe, I mean, not great, but also I think at least for Gay, and then some people may not even remember, their third round pick was Lucas Niang, who opted out before the season. Yes. He could be right. A huge deal next year. Willie Gay could be a huge deal next year. I feel pretty much the same way I did about Clyde Edwards-Helaire with that pick as I did the day of the draft, but that is neither here nor there. I think that even the most excited sort of draft time Clyde fan would say that between he and Willie Gay for their situations or whatever, did not, our conversations about them, and maybe Clyde has a huge Super Bowl, whatever. Our conversations about both Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Willie Gay Jr. were both sort of, well, wait until they break out the real plays for them, or they'll sprinkle in as time goes on. For both of them, they had late season injuries that, again, not necessarily, not in any way an indictment on them. I've remained very excited about Willie Gay and quite hopeful for Lucas Niang. But they just, like, how many times pre-draft did we talk about how, you know, well, the Chiefs are going to need contributors early, and they're going to need to be able to, especially years down the road, which is still true, fill out their roster because salary cap stuff's going to get more difficult. So those cheaper guys are going to be even more important. But they are back in the Super Bowl, having gotten very little from their first, second, and third round draft picks, which is just really nuts. Obviously, L'Jarius Sneed, the fourth round pick, has been outrageously valuable. Yep. And incredible. One of the best picks in the draft, if not the best pick in the draft. I haven't done all the research to say that definitively. Mike Dana had some nice moments. He's been a rotational end. That's a good fifth round pick. Hadn't seen much from Bo Pete Keys. Turk Wharton as an undrafted free agent has been very valuable. It's not that it's an unsalvageable draft class by any means. I just thought it was kind of interesting to look at how good this team was again. And maybe it's just another example of how we perhaps overrate draft picks, if nothing else. Not really a take, just something I kind of wanted to throw to you guys.
Right. No, I completely understand what you're saying. And I think if my memory serves me back in, you know, late April, early May, you know, I was trying to explain to people that this was quite a bit of a hedge in terms of a draft class, right? You're hedging getting production in the immediate, but obviously having sustainability in years 3, 4, and 5, particularly if you're the fifth year option player, that is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't want to say that Clyde like underperformed by any means, but I know what you're saying. Like, he's not a 1,000-yard running back. He did have over 1,100 yards, or exactly 1,100 yards all purpose this season, mm-hmm. and 5 touchdowns. He didn't do a ton in the AFC Championship game, but he did score a touchdown. So, you know, there was issues, back in September where it's like, man, he hasn't scored a 1-yard touchdown when given the circumstances. At least they did that against the Buffalo Bills. Shout out to Nick Allegretti, who is still pushing his defender into God knows where on that touchdown run. But he did have 1,100 yards. So he was still a plus, but obviously I think we were expecting more from him, particularly in the passing game, like you mentioned, Josh, just because that's massively the reason why they took him in the draft. Was like, he's so good at both things.
It's not like they tried to hide that. They made that obvious. Well, no, this is a dude Pat wanted to use in the passing game. And so
in the passing game.
Definitely.
And it never really materialized. Yeah, and you're right, Seth. So it never really materialized in the way we anticipated, where we thought, hey, it may be, you know, a true 1-to-1 yard ratio versus what it ended up being, which is 803 rushing yards and 297 on the receiving end. Willie Gay, it's a little bit of spags. It's a little bit of the offseason that we talked about, just him not getting the reps, which he acknowledged in December. And the idea is that, you know, hey, maybe we're going to save him for January. Well, that didn't work out, did it, kids? Do you guys realize that Lucas Niang would play in the Super Bowl if he was on the roster all season? Just think about
that. Yeah, he'd probably be the starting right tackle.
Yes, and think about how tough it is. Now, no, I have not talked to Lucas Niang. I haven't talked to his trainer or his family recently, but I wonder, and I'm just thinking out loud, I wonder what that's like, knowing that Mike Rimmers would, like you mentioned, Josh, be a left tackle, and that would pretty much give way for Lucas Niang to be a right tackle and keep Andrew Wiley at his natural position at the guard spot. And so, look, if Lucas Niang's on the roster, is even Stefan Wisniewski on the roster? Does Brett Veach feel like he needs to always continue to fortify the depth at the O-line position? So just something to think about. And, yeah, I just can't believe 32 teams just didn't. Look, this comes down to scouting department. This comes down to manpower. This comes down to where you emphasize your scouting. I'm just going to give a little secret, kids. The Chiefs like to scout the South and the Southeast. Okay. Some teams don't put scouts there a ton, or they don't check out Louisiana Tech as much as you would think they should. So the Chiefs got away with it, knowing where they spread out their draft, you know, sort of scouting resources. It's like, honestly, L'Jarius Sneed should be the defensive player of the year, not named Chase Young.
It's sort of like how Aaron Donald should just get his own award every year. Like, Chase Young should just get the Chase Young Award for 2020 and then give defensive rookie of the year to Sneed. Yeah, I feel that.
Bo Peep Keys, as I've always said, is a year two player. He was clearly a developmental pick. Again, kind of playing the long game for Brett Veach. And look, Mike Dana, we never knew who he was. Hey, he's still on the roster. Therefore, it's a good draft pick in my eyes.
No Seth, shade you to Mike Dana. About any of that? Does any of that?
I literally didn't know his name.
I know. I had no idea. I still think I pronounce his last name wrong half the time by accident because I've never really committed to one or the other.
Mm-hmm. I have such a not pessimistic, but what I view as a realistic view of draft picks.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't even say that they, you know, I wouldn't even say that they really didn't get that much out of their first three picks relative to what I expect out of draft picks as rookies. I think because draft coverage is what it is, we have outsized expectations that are not commensurate with what draft picks actually do. And we've talked about this before. You know, everyone thinks like you're going to get an instant starter and borderline Pro Bowl, if not Pro Bowl player in the first round. Second round, you're going to get an instant starter who's really good, maybe tops out as a Pro Bowler. Third, you know, you'll get a consistent starter. In the fourth round, a rotational play. That's never, ever, 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 ever how it actually works out. The numbers just don't make sense, right? You know, 16 times 7 every year, along with a bunch of undrafted guys. That's just not how that works. There's a reason why it's like, well, a 10-year starter on offensive line. That's because there aren't 200 offensive linemen coming in every year that can play in the pros.
Right.
And so Lucas Niang, I'm curious how he's thinking too, because honestly, based on his college tape, I think there's an off chance that he'd be starting at left tackle and Remmers would be at right tackle where he's more comfortable. Because Niang could he could play in college.
Just pre-injury and post-injury, or I guess through injury, was just a huge line of demarcation, if memory serves, from what you were looking at.
It was. He still played well, and he could not slide. He was so hurt, he couldn't slide. He had to backpedal, and he was still good. And that's so impressive. So I'm just saying I think he could, because I think Remmers is a little more comfortable on the right side. The reason I think that is because that's basically all he's played, but that's a whole other line.
Yes.
It's a whole other ball of wax there. And so for me, the Chiefs were in a unique position with the whole run it back tour that they didn't really need anything from the draft class this year.
Yeah.
And the fact
I would say outside of running back because of Damian Williams sort of opting out shortly after the draft and Willie Gay because, you know, they had no youth at linebacker unless you want to include Ben Neiman, but you kind of knew what you already have before the draft.
Yep. And so they got some of that out of those guys. I will say one thing they needed, and I think, you know, Josh, where you and I agreed, like on the draft in itself, you know, I was more like, if they take a running back, I'm not going to care that much. But boy, would I rather they get a cornerback.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that they kind of needed, although the secondary has played well enough, again, under Spagnuolo, that they didn't quite need it. But they really did need a guy in a lot of ways to come in and step up.
You want to hear something, Seth?
I always want to hear something.
It was told to me not too long ago, and this will be different. I think this will be different this year. This year is kind of like up in the air. But a lot of people were like, "Why didn't the Chiefs draft a cornerback in the draft? Right? Like, why didn't they do that?" And I think the dates work out a certain way. That they were pretty convinced, them being the Chiefs, they were pretty convinced that they could persuade Bashaud Breeland to come back for one more year under the let's run it back theme. And because of the pandemic, and again, you have to forecast a lot of this stuff, but because of the pandemic, where was the, what were owners thinking, you know, how much was, you know, free agency going to be a big market for the cornerback position? Quietly, it wasn't. They all kind of assumed that Bashaud Breeland was going to come back, which then gave them the ability to obviously understand that they would have Breeland and War, which means that they could prioritize further down the draft, because they knew at the time, we know that we're grading L'Jarius Sneed a lot higher than most teams, and that proved to be correct.
And good on them for being patient and waiting to the fourth round, because they clearly liked the guy and he got his chances early. I mean, they had him playing a ton of snaps right away. Him and Mike Dana and Tashaun Wharton. So that's kind of the interesting thing though.
I was going to say too, and they knew at the time that Bashaud Breeland was going to have a 4-game suspension, which also kind of dictated his market.
Right. And so it's just interesting that even though they didn't, you know, so Willie Gay, they got some good play out of him in small doses. Yeah. Edwards Hilaire, you got some good play out of him in small doses, not as much as what you'd want.
Can I give one very selfish little running back thing real quick, and then I'll give you the full dismount here, Seth?
Go for it.
I interrupted you, so I pretty much gave you no choice. Sorry. I've been just staring at Pro Football Reference for a second. I wanted to sneak this out. So Clyde ends up with 1,100 yards from scrimmage through the 13 regular season games that he played in, 5.1 yards per touch. Last year, Damien Williams and LeSean McCoy ended up with about 1,300 yards from scrimmage in more games, obviously, in more work. But they both, I didn't know this until just now, they both had exactly 5.0 yards per touch is what they averaged. Those are not all apples to apples. There are different depths of targets. Clyde did not get used the same way as Damien Williams did. I 1,000% understand that. But I'm kind of doing a production thing right now. And sure, Clyde's production was Damien Williams, LeSean McCoy replacement level. That's all. I'm done.
Okay. And so the idea being that, you know, you didn't see because you had a guy opt out in the third round and you got kind of a sprinkling of production in your first round and your second round guy. It's crazy how well they did on the back end. Because, you know, one thing you mentioned, getting a rotational defensive end in the fifth round is good. Mm-hmm. It's beyond good. That's amazing. Yeah. You get a guy in the fifth round that can play, and he started sometimes when they needed him to, and play well. Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable. And at this point, with the way they've done with defensive backs in late rounds, I'm like, well, maybe Bo Pete Keys next year, we're going to be like, how are we going to keep him off the field? So I think it's just demonstrative of how strong the Chiefs roster already was. And we've talked a lot about the idea of being a top-heavy roster. And I think one of the advantages the Chiefs have this year, and it's going to go away a little bit next year because you start to lose some guys in free agency and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But it's that you are not drafting for need, because as soon as you are drafting for need, you are in trouble, because the draft is a crapshoot. And if you're drafting, and that's why it's so hard, like you get these teams like, oh, well, we need a left tackle, so we're going to draft this dude at 15. It's like, hopefully he's as good as you think he is, because otherwise you're a little hosed. And that's where the draft just becomes so tricky, because it is a crapshoot in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously, you lessen the risk the higher the pick. To an extent, honestly, it feels to me like by the time we get to like pick, what, 20? It's kind of like, yeah, who knows? You know, it's like the top 10 guys.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. $5, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You guys want to do half an hour of questions?
Let's get nutty.
We are notoriously bad at actually getting through all of the questions that I want us to get through, and that is not me blaming my illustrious co-hosts. I'm also very bad at getting us through these questions. So we're going to try to get a good chunk of them. We're giving ourselves a long chunk of time today. We'll get through just as many as we can here. I'm going to send this one towards you, Nate. I'll kind of direct them. And if whoever doesn't get the direction of it really wants to hop in, feel free. From JettyRat_RB on Twitter. Have you noticed the change in tone from Patrick this year? It's subtle, but it definitely seems to have a little more edge this season. What do you think? Nate, you're on every single godforsaken press conference. I'll go to you.
Yeah, a lot of it is, and this is my interpretation, so I just want to be clear. Thank you for the question. This year is different for Patrick, and it was always going to be that way. And I remember writing a story ahead of the season about, hey, mentally, he's been to the journey. So now he knows a lot of these things are quiet confidence, not as exuberant. Obviously, the pandemic has kind of changed that. But yeah, tonally, he's different. And he's what's the best way I can say this and not get in trouble? he is quietly aware. And you should respect him for how aware he is on certain things. But I do understand that he's getting to a place now where he knows what's real and what isn't. And is arrogance not the word I'm looking for, but in short, yes. I can't answer that. Like I'm kind of walking a tightrope, and I know who I talked to about all of this, and I hope this makes sense in the audio format that we're choosing to answer these questions. But no, Patrick is continuing to go through a maturation process, and what I can't wait, kids, is about 3 to 4 years from now, this man's gonna be able to say whatever he wants, and I just wanna be there. And not like in the Aaron Rodgers phase, but I do think that
Aaron Rodgers seems sad about it. You know, I love Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers seems a little bummed to be in that stage.
Yeah, obviously he's going through a different situation right now. And again, Patrick won't have that problem, you know, 3 to 4 years, we assume. But Aaron Rodgers would tell you the entire, like there was a couple weeks ago where he told you the entire play of what led to the touchdown against the Bears. And I'm just like, you can only do that when you're at a certain stage in your career where you're just like, yeah, here's what the play call is. Here's what it means. Oh, I saw the Bears do this. We did that. And it's just like, you're not supposed to say that. But he's Aaron Rodgers. He's like, I don't care anymore. What I hope is that Patrick Mahomes gets very Kobe-esque where he's just like, no, this is the answer. This is what it's always going to be. And that's on you. If you think otherwise.
Go ahead.
So him saying, real quick, him saying the job's not done is a complete discipleship from the Kobe mentality. So I'm just saying that's where he's appears to be heading. So just keep that in mind. I really believe him saying, but the job's not done. Like he wasn't saying that a year ago because he's maturing. And he's trying to get to where someone who the opposite quarterback of the opposing team has already been, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Seth, I think it would be funny to go to you for gambling advice. So I'm going to take this your direction, but mostly because it's just a great bet from our friends over at BetMGM. You may have heard me mention this before the show, talking about BetMGM. They have a prop. This was sent tweeted out by Kevo Bevo and then sent to us by Zach. They have a bet, plus 600, for the Kansas City Chiefs to trail by 9 or more points at any stage of the game, but win by 9 or more points. I'm not going to ask you for financial. This is not financial advice, but I am very curious, Seth, what you think about that being a real prop bet over on from our friends at BetMGM.
Okay, this is going to be embarrassing.
Are you legally allowed to talk about gambling in any form?
I'm allowed to talk about gambling. So, okay, run it at me one more time and explain to me like I am a young child or a golden retriever what a prop bet is.
I just want to say somewhere, if Buffalo Bills fans are listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that they made a prop bet about your demise.
Well, and also Texans fans and Niners fans and Titans fans.
It's the bet four out of the last five postseason games, if you had bet on this prop bet, you would make money.
So this is that's crazy. Thing, right? Yeah,
that's
this is,
crazy.
So what this is saying, Seth, I'll explain it to you here.
All right. Golden Retriever.
If you were to bet $10 on this thing, you would win $60.
Okay.
And the bet is that the Chiefs will trail by 9 or more points at some point in the game, but ultimately win the game by 9 or more points. I just think it's amazing that that bet exists, that they thought, hey, we could do, why don't we put this up there?
The combination of those two things is what's funny. It's not just that they'll trail and then win, which by itself is kind of a goofy bet.
Right, because that first field goal could go Tampa's way.
Yeah.
True.
I have a feeling about this game.
Here we go.
And we'll see. And this is with the caveat. The Buccaneers are a really good team. I've been watching that first matchup in week 12. There were a series of things that had to happen for the Chiefs to not win that by 40. And I'm not sure those same things will, like Juan Thornhill had to get dusted a couple times in a way that I don't think he's going to get dusted. Armani Watts gave up a big play. You know why? Because Juan Thornhill really shouldn't have been on the field with how he was moving. I'm just not entirely certain. Now, Vita Vea being back is huge. That dude's a monster on the interior. I just am not sure that the way Tampa Bay's defense wins is the way to, you know, go Mandalorian against.
In fact, Danielle, if you would cut this out, I would appreciate it. I regretted even saying that.
You might say the force is not with them. I'm just, no matter how many times you delete it, I'm just going to say new things about the Mandalorian.
No, I just want what I said to be bleeped. Could just get what I said to be bleeped, because I'm genuinely afraid of the thing that I'm afraid of.
Okay, yeah, then we'll get out of here. So it is not the way against the Chiefs. The aggressive blitzing, they weren't playing man coverage as much as people think. It was a lot of like cover three type stuff, but they were like playing a type of cover three where it's like, hey, why don't you be relatively close to the line of scrimmage? It's like the Legion of Boom cover three where it's like, but you're still covering the deep third of the field. That doesn't work against Tyreek Hill or, for that matter, Mecole Hardman. Like, you can't bring Carlton Davis close to the line of scrimmage and say, hey, you're the deep guy, by the way. Now, they know that now. But teams are stubborn. They do their thing. And so I honestly not sure I would place a bet that the Chiefs trail by 9.
Okay, good enough. I'll take that.
That's my long road to a short thought here. I'm going to keep watching the film because you never know.
I just love that bet exists, and I wanted to bring that up. Great question. Here, I'll give this one to – go ahead, Nate.
No, I was just saying, great question.
Oh, yes.
That was a great question.
It really is. Nate from Ross, cage match between Josh and Seth. Seth gets no weapons, but Josh gets a taser. Who wins?
Oh, that's not fair to you, Josh.
It's really not.
Josh wins, guys. It's a taser. I don't know what you think they're feeding us up here in Minnesota, but
it definitely, I mean, if it's basically a little, like if it's a bug zapper, I don't really think it's helping my chances.
Yeah.
But if it's a decent taser, I've got that.
No, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, if it's a decent taser, I would say Josh is the betting favorite, and Seth's gonna have to be really unconventional, which is like, you know, giving a sermon, collecting the taser and then turning very dark.
Oh, if he gets the taser from me, I mean, the taser is either completely useless or it's life and death. Yeah, I don't know which one.
The taser matters. Like, I would be more confident fighting someone with a bat or a knife than I would with a taser. Cause like,
totally,
those aren't like game enders. I mean, they might hurt you really, 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 really bad, but you can still move. Like, I don't know if you've ever been like, you know, hit in the body with a bat. I mean, it hurts, but it's not going to kill you. Whereas a taser, your arms lock up and you're done. Like, you just drop.
I have not been hit by a bat, and I would love to continue that trend if we could just keep that one up. From Rodrigo, here's a different one for you, Seth. Super Bowl MVP bets besides Mahomes. Just gambling again, if you would.
Travis Kelce.
That's what I was going to say. I think that might be the only one. I if Hill had a crazy game, I just think they'd be on deep enough stuff that you'd just give it to Mahomes anyway, right?
Right.
Yeah, because you have to remember, too, it'll be not just receiving yards, it'll be passing yards. You know?
Yeah. Yep. And so Travis Kelce's one good bet because with him, it's more dink and dunk. So you might end up with like 16 catches.
Yep.
And that's when once you get past 10 catches, they start paying attention to the receiver as well. He's one. Chris Jones, though, it's crazy hard to get it as a defensive player. Mm-hmm. Crazy hard. And one more dark horse guy is, and this is very, very dark horse now, and it's just a feeling I have. Again, just a feeling. I'm too into feel-good stories. I would not be stunned if Juan Thornhill like picked off two passes and had one for a pick six. Guys, I cannot overstate how good he looked in the AFC Championship. And that dude is hungry. Like, it half near killed him sitting out last year's playoffs. He hated it. And he's got a huge chance here. And Tom doesn't quite have that same zip on the ball that he used to. Still got a real good arm. Not what he did. And if he hangs up a couple like he did against them in week 12 that the Chiefs just weren't able to bring down, I think Thornhill picks those up. He's just someone to look out for because he played against the Bucs. And if the Bucs use that game film and they say, we can get away with this throw, Juan Thornhill is going to get some picks. So it's just someone to think about.
Nate, what do you got?
No, it's a good entry. I would say, for similar reasons, I would say Tyrann Mathieu, the more veteran player. And a lot of this comes down to, and Seth knows this as well, like a lot of this comes down to where the picks happen at a certain scenario. Mm-hmm. So if the Chiefs are deep in their territory and Tyrann Mathieu has an interception in the red zone or in the end zone, or if he has a, you know, kind of Dean Swerson like pick six where he reads the quarterback size, that I would say Tyrann Mathieu because of his stature, who he is as a leader on the Chiefs. And if this comes to be not necessarily a blowout, but a comfortable win because the defense actually, you know, played at the same level as the offense, then I think Tyrann Mathieu would be another option.
Not to put our folks at BetMGM on blast, but I will say, so you know, the plus 3,500 group includes Le'Veon Bell, Sammy Watkins, Chris Godwin, Ronald Jones, Tyrann Mathieu, Chris Jones, all those guys in that little category. That was pretty long odds, not bad at all. There's not a one Thornhill selection for Seth's very, very dark horse. You can, however, get Tommy Townsend plus 50,000.
Hell yeah.
That is on the board. What would have to happen for a punter? He would have to be like it would have to, not only he'd have to make every punt perfect, right? He'd have to make like a game-saving tackle that forced a fumble and on a botched snap, run it in for a touchdown to win the game. Like if all those things happened, it could happen.
I think he literally has to have the game's only touchdown. Like I think on a fake punt, he throws or runs in the game's only touchdown. The final score is 7-3. And then boom, MVP Tommy Townsend, which I gotta say, it would be kind of fun for Patrick Mahomes to, you know, stack up Super Bowl MVP trophies. But if anybody goes to BetMGM and puts a dollar on Tommy Townsend and tweets me a screenshot, I will retweet it. I will retweet that. That might be a dollar well spent. I'm basically just selling a retweet for a dollar. This is an interesting little duo of questions. I'm going to just kind of throw these out together because they're both around the same person. And I'll go to you first on this one, Seth, from Ian. It felt like the Bucks had us figured out by the end of that game in November. And if there'd been a fifth quarter, they could have taken the lead. Could they crack us faster this time? In fact, I'm just going to give you just that one on its own, Seth.
So what ended up happening in that game was a couple of things. There were the Bucks had a few really big plays in the third and fourth quarter that honestly relied on Thornhill getting dusted a couple times and Armani Watts getting dusted once. You take away those three big plays, it wipes out a lot of what they do on offense. They did also start picking up the Chiefs blitzes better early on. People don't remember this. They dominated the Bucks in the first half. Like Tom Brady could not do a thing. Spagnuolo had him figured out. And then at halftime, Arians is a really good coach. And Brady's obviously is who he is. They made a lot of good adjustments. And the one thing about being super aggressive with your blitzes like they were is, and this is what the Raiders have done two both games this year, is if the protections called are correct, all you need with a blitzer is just get a body in the way, right? Because you just need 2.5 seconds and someone's open. And so they started doing that more in the second half, and the Chiefs didn't quite have an answer for it. I'm on the back end with their coverage. Their coverage has been a lot better the last few weeks than it was at that time period where you had Snead coming back for the first time in forever, still getting his legs under him, and Thornhill not playing remotely as well as he's playing right now.
Anything on that, Nate? We can speed run this, but I'll let you hop in on this. So I think it's interesting.
One thing to add, the Chiefs were up 17-0 and were in the red zone. And the only reason why that game got close, or the, I should say the start of the momentum swinging back into the Buccaneers' favor, again, to at least keep the game competitive. Again, the Buccaneers chose not to guard Tyreek Hill all game, and that's why they lost, ultimately. But the one way this game could be different is if Shaq Barrett is a monster. Because up 17-0 in the red zone, Shaq Barrett just flat-out beats Eric Fisher on a pass rush and strip sacks Mahomes, right? If that doesn't happen, the Chiefs are at least up 20-0, we assume, if Harrison Butker makes a short field goal, and the game is pretty much untouchable, or the Chiefs score another touchdown, and they're up 23-24-0. So a lot of chipping, a lot of play-actioning, a lot of rollouts of the pocket, obviously some creative stuff in the backfield with jet sweeps and misdirections and end arounds. Like, obviously the Chiefs, I'm assuming, will be creative enough, but Shaq Barrett concerns me. As to if the Chiefs, you know, either side, if they get a lead, that obviously would be good for them. If they are having to be behind, then obviously you have to pass more. You just have to be aware of where Shaq Barrett is at all times. Because the only reason the Buccaneers kind of figured out the Chiefs was because they got a turnover when they absolutely needed one.
Let's speed run a little bit. This one will bounce right off that one from Eric on Twitter. Seth, how close was 27-24 really? Watching the game, it felt like both the KC offense and defense took their foot off the gas at 27-10. I think you kind of went this direction, but I'd love a phrase to how close was it really?
It wasn't really close. That required the Bucs to score 10 straight unanswered points relatively quickly for it to get that close. It was either 10 or 14. And if you look, I mean, with in the fourth quarter, I think the Chiefs were still leading by, I know it was double digits. So it wasn't as close as it looked. It was kind of similar to like the Bills game from earlier in the season. A little closer than that, but not much.
From Nicole, and I'll make this one go to Nate here. How long do we get to hang on to Spags before he gets another head coaching opportunity?
Thank you, Nicole. You get one more year. That's about it. Now, assistant coaches' contracts are a little different. They're not as long as obviously the head coaches is. Obviously, you kind of roll that year to year to some degree, whether it's 2 years, 3 years. But I think this can be said for Eric Bieniemy as well. I think
Did we do a show after David Culley got hired? I feel like that happened Friday also, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Should have mentioned that earlier.
Just
Andy Reid coaching tree, another branch, right where we expected it, right, guys? Right, guys? Right, guys? Yeah. Right? They would call it.
Godspeed. Godspeed in Houston. This applies to Eric Bieniemy too. I think, let's say the Chiefs win, and they're back-to-back champions, and let's say the Chiefs are not god-awful on defense. People understanding Spag's contract, I believe, will reach out to the Chiefs and express some interest in interviewing Steve Spagnuolo for a possible, you know, not, I mean, I hate the word retread in a lot of ways, but he would maybe get a second shot at being a head coach. So in short, you have him on Sunday and you may have him for one more year if the Chiefs defense continues to be respectable, if not slightly above average.
I saved this question for myself from Karen. Does Andy's mask he wears during the game look really weird? Yes, and I'm tired of pretending like it doesn't. Nobody wants to talk about it. This can be the show. We all just admit it. He's got the same one every week since he lost the face shield, which is incredible that he even has... I could not tell you where any one of my specific masks has been over the course of this last year. I got a bunch of them, and I always got one within striking distance. He's wearing the same one every week. I don't think he's ever got the bottom part strapped around the back of his head. It's one of the, it's like the horizontal straps instead of the ones that go around the ear. Looks like he's always got the top one, and it looks like he's got a beak. He looks like a platypus whenever he has that mask on, and I'm tired of lying to the people and saying that I don't notice it and that it's not weird, because it definitely is. The man is a genius. Big fan of Andy Reid. He wears his mask funny.
Just what a great comp with the beak. He looks like
one of those monkeys with the big proboscis.
If we're going to acknowledge this question, a huge thanks for Chiefs fans needs to be given to Alan Wright, the equipment director. He has handled Andy Reid's look since since the season started, is the way I'll explain it. So one reason why he does not lose his mask, Josh, is because, you know, Andy Reid has employees that are tightly aware of it, have sanitized it, and he's ready on game day. But a lot of Andy Reid's attire is under Alan Wright's responsibilities and duties. So
excellent point.
They've made it work, but it does look unconventional.
Right now, I'm going to stop the podcast. I'm stopping it for you two. I'm stopping it for the listeners. Just Google proboscis monkey right now. Just type loudly, type proudly. Just search Google proboscis monkey, and it looks like basically Andy Reid's mask if it was covered in Chiefs print. I'm hoping that you guys are going to Google proboscis monkey. It kind of, right? Right? Don't focus on the phallic nature of it. That's not the important part. It's that if it was covered in Chiefs print, you would not think it looked very phallic. You would think it looks like Andy Reid's mask. Wow, there's a couple of these pictures that are really, I feel like the monkey's showing off some. That's not. That Google image page gets dicey on row 3. Oof-a-doof. Anyway, thank you for asking that question, Karen. I've been waiting to answer that question for a very long time. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. If he has a way of showing how much he admires someone, I guess.
Yeah, don't Google proboscis monkey and then stop after 2 pictures. Because it eventually gets very National Geographic, but more graphic. It gets very National Graphic down a couple of rows on the Google image search. It's the, you know, that's the magic of live radio. This is a podcast, but I have no desire for this to be taken out of the show. This is very real.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, 2 pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
From Chris, J.J. Watt is possibly on the way out in Houston as well now. Could that work in KC, looking at both financially and on the field? Nate, I'll kick that to you real quick, kind of a little off-season look ahead.
I don't love it. Like, could J.J. Watt be as good as Justin Houston has been in Indianapolis? I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
That's fine. That's an acceptable answer. We're in full speed run mode. Seth, you got the next one, but this one's also for Nate from Dan. What might the starting O-line look like for the Super Bowl? Same as against the Saints, with Wiley at tackle, or will Rankin be at tackle and Wiley will stay at guard? What's your opinion? Your opinion is the best starting five. Seth, you can give us your best starting five, but Nate, what's your predicted starting five?
Probably what you saw in the Saints game. Go on, Seth.
I think, yeah, Remmers, then Allegretti, Ryder, Wisniewski, Wiley.
And you had said last episode that you actually think that offensive line in some ways might actually end up performing better because you like Wisniewski so much more at right guard.
I think It just depends. Like, Eric Fisher has come a long ways, but and I'm trying to be careful because he got hurt, and that sucks.
Yeah.
And he has come such a long ways to become a good left tackle. But he does have bad games at times. Sometimes they're injury related, like against the Saints. I mean, he was a net negative against the Saints. He struggled, like, really badly. Mm-hmm. And also,
if he hadn't been out there struggling, Ysir Durant would have been out there struggling because Rimmers was out.
So. Ysir Durant probably would have struggled more. And so Fish was a warrior to play because he knew, like, oh my gosh, they need me. And as bad as it was, it could have been worse. It can always get worse. I do think that the idea is basically average offensive linemen, which is what Remmers and Wiley have shown themselves to be.
Doesn't feel very much like a speed run.
They have a variance. And if they play at the high end of their variance, the line will be just fine.
In the AFC title game, why did it seem like the Chiefs' defensive line was able to get pressure on Allen all night with rushing just four when they were struggling to do that in the regular season? Was that because Thornhill unlocked the defense, Spag-sized coverage schemes, or something else? That's from Tadashi to Seth.
Yes.
Love it. Yes. It's all of those, right?
It was all also, of those things. Also, and Clark played better.
Yeah. Also, Treverius Ward. If he plays like that, you can always get pressure with four.
Yep.
Seth, do you think the Chiefs are going to do something to help out their tackles? From Scott on Twitter.
Yes, it's not going to look exactly what it'll look like with every team, but you're going to see, like, the jet sweep. You're going to see a lot of that action because it slows down edge rushers. You're going to see rolling pockets. You're going to see sliding protections, things like that. And then some more traditional stuff, you know, chips, tight ends helping out, that sort of stuff. And RPOs getting the ball out quick. Andy Reid helps his tackles a lot in that way, not as much with, like, when he needs to, at least. With Schwartz and Fisher, he's like, good luck, guys. But with he will.
Hey, Andy. Roll out them Travis Kelce screen games, dog.
Yes.
Just let us have it.
Sporting RZ asked about more screens and passing to the running backs, like whenever Chad Henne was the quarterback. You bring a little bit of that out, maybe?
Yeah, sure.
Guys, too.
Yeah, go nuts.
Gotta bring it out.
I've got a prediction for a few good wheel route type things. They're gonna do a few things that help. Ultimately, though, they have to play at least average. You know, there's only so much you can do. I'm more worried about the interior against Vita because the only time I've seen Mahomes really struggle against edge rushers was Nick Bosa when he, like, won every snap in the first three quarters of the Super Bowl. I've never seen anything like that. And then occasionally against the Chargers, but that's also because they have really great coverage. So I just, that interior, Vita Vea scares me, man.
One word answer all from all three of us on three. Who gets a head coaching gig first, Bieniemy or Spags? One, two, three,
Bieniemy.
Bieniemy.
That's from Evan. Good question, Evan. This is a bit of a larger topic, but I want to at least take a second on it here from Brandon. Please discuss how the Chiefs are the gold standard in the NFL right now, possible dynasty, and they lose zero front office staff when other teams are being picked bare, who have been very average to ungood. Also, if we could just get Nate to talk about the complete ineptitude of the Texans. Take 30 on it, Nate. Take 30 for me.
Woo! Here we go. So you telling me nobody wanted this job? And listen to me, kids. Nobody wanted that job. I just can't understand what the Houston Texans are doing other than they're ran by a poor, terrible owner. Like, let's just keep it like it is. And y'all think these players don't talk to one another? What? The Texans are terrible. And I hope they get mossed 0-16 because the ownership is terrible. And it's not just the players. It's also personnel department. It's also people who have worked in there and have gotten out and realized, wow, this is a bottom of the barrel organization. Now, moving on to the Chiefs situation. Yeah, I think Ryan Poles is destined to become a GM. He got some interviews this year. Keep an eye out for him in the years to come. I know that the Chiefs felt like this year was the last time that the group was going to be together. It appears to be next year. So if the Chiefs scouting department does as good of a job as it did last year, and obviously the challenge is going to be much harder because obviously you had a pandemic college football season, and it's going to be a little harder to get, you know, all the info and all the, you know, personal stuff about players, not just obviously their football techniques and how they obviously learn and how you can translate that to the NFL game and obviously your coaching staff and philosophy. But if they, it should give Chiefs fans confidence that they have everybody coming back next year so that maybe you have just as good of a draft class and you understand that if you win back-to-back titles, it does give you some level of being able to have some, you know, card at your disposal in free agency, even though you know you may not be able to outspend players because, as we talked about earlier, once you get to 2022, 2023, them contracts actually start being on the books. But the Houston Texans, Big Wolf, and, you know, I know it's going to be painful for me to say this, even Bill O'Brien is going to have a better year next year than the Houston Texans. And that is saying something.
Okay, I think I've gotten down to nothing but quick shots here. There's a bunch we're not going to get to, and there are a handful that obviously were a little bit redundant, and so I just took the first one that I saw on those. Excellent questions from everyone. Thank you very much for all of the questions.
Yes.
From JD Banjo Man, what's the perfect Super Bowl party food? Seth?
A tombstone pizza.
Nate?
Nachos.
I was going to say nachos. I thought I was going to go off the board and say nachos. God, I love nachos. Mexican love food nachos. All the time, anywhere. From Casey Bambino, this, I don't know if this is really a question, but dang, it's a good stat. The Chiefs are undefeated in their last 14 games against teams whose names start with a B, including 6-0 this year. Does this guarantee that they beat the Bucks? Yes or definitely?
Definitely. Sure.
Definitely, right? I mean,
I can't disagree. I have no stat to disagree with.
Listen, Seth, I know you love to go beyond the box score. If you want to get some analytics on the Chiefs being undefeated their last 14 games against teams whose name starts with a B, I'm all ears. Who would that loss have been to?
I don't know.
It can't be the Broncos, right? They've been dominating the Broncos since Peyton Manning was out of uniform.
I think it maybe it was the Bills a good long minute ago. I don't know. Excellent stat from Casey Bambino. From Fresh-Faced on Twitter, if I'm imagining this includes the three of us here. If your imaginary B-ball team, it says B-ball, your imaginary B-ball team just won the imaginary championship and is already talking about imagining running it back, who's taking the team-friendly discount to keep this thing going? Who's jumping ship for more imaginary cash? And who's just happy to be there for the league minimum? My only question here is if we all have the same
answer.
The same answer for the three of us.
I wish we could newlywed game this. This would be
We can all do the. We can do the 1, 2, 3 again if we want.
Okay, so assuming that, just make sure you clarify which one we're answering then.
Yeah, so we have who's taking the team-friendly discount to keep this thing going, who's jumping ship for more imaginary cash, and who is just happy to be there for the league minimum. Okay, we're gonna have the same answers. Okay, so I'll count to three, then we'll say a name. Who is taking the team-friendly discount to keep this thing going? 1, 2, 3,
Nate.
Yes, it's me.
Nate, did you not answer until we answer?
It's me. I appreciate it.
He just didn't want to say himself for the by far most morally upstanding one. Who is jumping ship for more imaginary cash? 1, 2, 3,
Josh.
Me.
Seth.
Josh created a bit that says SethHatesMoney.com.
That is essentially why Seth is my answer for who's happy to be here for the league minimum. But Nate has Seth wanting to go get the big imaginary bag, I guess.
Just want to get paid, man.
I think the
you gotta
other thing
feed,
is
you got to feed those kids, man.
I do
that's,
have a lot
that's,
of kids.
See, that's the thing is you have a lot of kids. And Nate knows that I will work for retweets, basically. Like, that's sort of my whole brand also. Good question, though. Which will happen first? This one's from Jonathan, and it'll be our last question for today. Which happens first, head coach Eric Bieniemy or Taser Ghost Chili incident?
I'm sorry, EB, but somebody's... I'm sorry.
If you would have asked me that, you know, a few weeks ago, I would have said HCEB. If you would ask me that right after the draft, I would have said probably ghost taser incident. But this whole pandemic thing, I don't know if you guys have heard anything about it. These are apparently unprecedented times. I will say that we will complete that bet before Eric Bieniemy gets hired to be a head coach, because because in my heart of hearts, I believe that we will be able to do things in person together before Eric Bieniemy gets a head coaching job.
I please so too, because that's the one delay, people. If you're all wondering what the problem is, I figured it wouldn't be as fun. Like, it's not as fun Josh tasing himself. And it's not as fun. Josh and Nate are both going to want to be there in person to watch me suffer as I eat that pepper. Golly, why did I say a ghost pepper? Why didn't I just say tasing or punching in the face or something like that? I'm so upset about this. I'm going to ruin a trip to Kansas City over this. We should have you guys come up to Minnesota. Like, that'll be that way I'll be in my home bathroom. And, like, you guys can just hang out with my family while I die. And
hey, I can document this. I mean, I do these things for a living.
Yeah. I've got a bidet too, Seth. I feel like we just stick around here. You can use my bidet, and
that is cold water. Nate, let me tell you.
Yeah, and well, you're gonna have a spicy pepper.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And so no, like, but this is gonna happen, everyone. We haven't forgot. Believe me, it comes up like every so often when Josh and I are talking. And yes, despite the feud, we've made it through a tough year. We do talk in text more than people know. Every now and then, it'll just come up. One of us will just be like randomly, oh, I forgot we got to do this.
Got to do this dumb thing.
Why do we talk?
Listen, the real upside is, just, for me, what it's done that's really been nice is it has given me one single solitary, absolutely thread-thin silver lining of the unpleasantness of the last year is, well, at least I haven't also gotten tased. At least 2020 didn't also tase me, you know? So it was nice to have that. We will have another show in a couple of days, so we're going to have plenty of content. We may even pick through some more questions at some point. Depends on how the next couple days go. With more news and all that stuff, we haven't talked at all about the Matt Stafford trade. If that happened in the offseason, we would have talked about it. It's on the NFC side and it's Super Bowl week.
Yep.
Same with Eric Bieniemy. I'm sure we'll do more of a look back at this year and then the things that happen, what will happen in the future. Got a lot of questions about some draft stuff, free agency and everything. We will talk about that plenty, plenty, plenty in the months to come. But it's Super Bowl week right now. And so instead we talk about Super Bowl food and ghost peppers getting taste. So, you know, pretty on brand. You can read all of Seth and Nate's work up on The Athletic. Both of them have stuff coming very soon. In fact, may even be some fresh pieces up there right now that you can go check out. Certainly should have it soon. Seth also has the Chief of the North newsletter. Links to that are on his Twitter, which is at RealMNChiefsFan. Nate is at ByNateTaylor. I am at JB Briscoe. Follow all of us on Twitter and elsewhere there. And that's it. That's the show. Nate, close us out.
It's Super Bowl week. You better ice up. You better ice up for these boys. Tampa. Wow, y'all. Act like you've been there before, but in fact, don't act like you've been there before. Act like you're trying to go back to back. It's just, it's Super Bowl week. Are any of us going to get sleep? The answer is no.
Hey, football fans. This is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.